This is an iHeart podcast.
Whatever team Fia is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Your holster is way more important than you think it is. It's just way more important than you think it is. What? Look, and I get that. The holster's not the sexy part of carrying firearms, right? You want to talk about your weapon and your ammunition. You want to talk about your safety training. You want to talk about how you did at the range. Oh, look at my groups. I was doing these failure drills today. And all that stuff's really important. I mean, really, really important. I'm not discounting that. But I've known so many people who do all those things. They take all the necessary steps, and then they carry with a holster they bought from a big box hunting store that was made 1,000 at a time. Please, don't put your life in one of those holsters. You need to trust Northwest Retention Systems because it's all custom-made gear. It's the only thing I carry around. NWRetention.com. That's NWRetention.com. Use the promo code Jesse. Get you 10% off. You know, there's an old way of thinking. Don't tell me about the man. Tell me about the man behind the man. I worry a lot, and I've been thinking about this. It's been gnawing at me all week. That's why we decided to do this special. I'm worried about Kamala Harris flying under the radar. Now, I understand you know who Kamala Harris is, obviously. I understand she's had plenty of headlines. She's on national TV, on the debates and things like that. But I don't think we're paying enough attention to her. I don't. And this is why. To put it bluntly, Joe Biden is really, really not doing well. That's not exactly news. He's not doing well. He's faltering in every possible way. And a man who's faltering in every possible way is running for the most stressful job in the United States of America. You saw that debate earlier this week, right? Was it Tuesday night? I don't know. I don't do days. But you saw that debate. Joe Biden, whether you think he did well or not, and again, remember, I said I think he did okay. Joe Biden looked so old. He looked old and tired. And Joe Biden wants to be president of the United States of America? You know these guys, when they become president, and look, you can do that thing, I'm not crying for the president, 400 grand a year, whatever they make. I get that. That's fine. You know these guys don't really sleep 8 hours a night, right? Whether they have an ebb sleep on or not, these guys don't sleep 8 hours a night. Why? Because there's always something important you have to do. Okay, so he's running for the most grueling job, stress-wise, in the country, and he's that old? You know what I'm saying. I did as best as I could do to tiptoe around it, but you know exactly what I'm saying, don't you? Joe Biden's not going to make it 4 years. Now, I don't want him to pass away. That's not what I'm saying, although he certainly might. But Joe Biden is not going to physically be able to do this job for 4 years. He still is calling it a day on the campaign trail at 9, 10, 11 a.m. in the morning. Whoa, I did an event here. I'll tell you what. Oh, whew, I am exhausted. I am craving an insurer and a nap. We'll try this again tomorrow morning. He's not going to make it. And that's why I don't think we're paying enough attention to Kamala Harris. We've brought her up several times. Everybody says, you know, she's going to be president soon. But the truth is, this lady really might be president soon. Now, I don't think Donald Trump's going to lose, but he certainly might. You and I can distrust the polls all we want. Joe Biden's up, and in some cases up significantly in every single poll. Kamala Harris is about to be that one heartbeat away from the presidency of the United States, and we're not talking about her. And we should be talking about her, because Kamala Harris has a record that's as radical as any Democrat in the United States Senate. On top of that, and possibly even more dangerously, Kamala Harris might not even believe in anything, really. Kamala Harris has a career of doing, well, whatever will help her get ahead. And I do mean whatever will help her get ahead. She has made a career out of doing and saying whatever helps her get there. So if Joe Biden gets elected, don't want it to happen. Please don't let it happen. Let's say Joe Biden gets elected. And Joe Biden can't do it for 4 years. This is about to be the president of the United States of America. We're about to have a president of the United States of America presiding over a party that has completely lost its freaking mind. And she's going to go along with them because this is a woman who craves power and wants to stay in power. And look, the last time Biden let Harris out of the basement, she had this little slip up.
You have a president in the White House who actually sees you, who understands your needs, who understands the dignity of your work, and who has your back. A Harris administration together with Joe Biden as the president of the United States, the Biden-Harris administration will provide access to $100 billion in low-interest loans and investments for minority business owners.
A Harris administration? Together with Joe Biden. Together with the Joe Biden presidency, you could tell. Pretty good work there on the fly there, Kamala. Adjusting things, but yikes. Oh, she knows it. This is a woman who drips with ambition. She knows it. And this is a woman, again, who will say anything.
We will eliminate the death penalty. We will eliminate private prisons. Eliminate cash bail. I've been a leader on that in the United States Senate. Cash bail is not only a criminal justice issue, it's an economic justice issue, meaning people are sitting in jail because they don't have the money to get out. Meanwhile, the person who has been charged with the same offense and has money is out exercising free will and liberty, right? Out there able to walk the streets. So that's an economic justice issue. So we'll get rid of cash bail as well. So these are some of the things we'll do.
Let's dwell on that just for a moment. We'll get rid of cash bail. Every jurisdiction in the United States of America doesn't fall under the federal government's jurisdiction. That's a local issue, a state and local issue. But again, these people are radical nuts, absolute radical nuts. And unlike Joe Biden, Kamala Harris doesn't have any interest in doing that. I'm the more moderate, sane voice out there. Just trust me. No, Kamala Harris is going to go right along with whatever the radical left is now. And let's take a moment and dwell on that here. What is the radical left now? Well, you've seen it all over your television set. The radical left, they think you're a Nazi. Why? Oh, just because you believe in the Constitution. They think you want people to die if you want to open your small business. These people believe in reparations. These people believe in high taxation. These people believe openly now. Remember, they're open about all this stuff in gun confiscation. They've even pulled Joe Biden far to the left on this. The things Kamala Harris will do absent Joe Biden, they're not good things. And remember this. This is a viciously ambitious woman. You remember how she treated Joe Biden at that one campaign, at the one debate? It made me uncomfortable.
It was hurtful to hear you talk about the reputations of two United States senators who built their reputations and career on the segregation of race in this country. And it was not only that, but you also worked with them to oppose busing. And, you know, there was a little girl in California who was part of the second class to integrate her public schools. And she was bused to school every day. And that little girl was me.
Ouch. Forgot about that, didn't you? Gotta be honest. I forgot about it too, till my team and I were talking about it. Yikes. This is a woman who wants power, and is there anything worse than somebody achieving power who wants it really, really, really badly? Kamala Harris is a nut. And these leftists today are nuts. You and I, we have a hard time wrapping our minds around this. But the truth is, this is not the Democratic Party of even Bill Clinton. Those days are gone. It's really, really, really important we don't let Kamala Harris be Vice President of the United States. It just is. All right. That may have made you uncomfortable, but I'm right. Now, we have an awesome show, an awesome slate of guests for you tonight, but most importantly, we have me. We'll be back. Joining me now, former congressman and current dean of business at Liberty University, Dave Bratt, everybody. Congressman Kamala Harris, the left. I need you, because you're way better at this stuff than me, I need you to tell me when it went so hard left, because I feel like it was yesterday. I mean, I grew up, I mean, in my years, it was Bill Clinton. He was the first big national Democrat I knew of. And don't get me wrong, my parents weren't exactly big fans, but it was nothing like this. I mean, nothing like this at all. And they just have gone nutso. What prompted that? Why? Is this an Obama thing?
I don't. I think it's more of a kind of a woke reaction to President Trump in some sense. The left has gotten away forever with fighting hard, playing hardball. And we have, you know, Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, the gentlemen that don't fight back. And so when Trump started fighting for the first time ever, and he's really, you know, a New Yorker, they're trying to throw all this that he's a hater. He was loved by everybody. He's got pictures from every color, creed, religion, whatever. Yeah, 20 years ago, he's got a picture with everybody. They all love him. They're hugging him. And then as soon as he ran, that he just triggered the left something crazy, because I think they see a real competitor now. And so, like in my district, you know, the Democrats, they were still, you know, treading lightly. It's still a 50-50 district in a lot of ways, you know, a lot of just normal business people. And so the politicians were careful. But then when Trump won, the left got emboldened. And part of it might be irrational. That's what we're going to find out on November 3rd, whether the left played a smart hand or whether they went crazy train. And that's coming up.
Speaking of crazy train, Kamala Harris, I think that she's actually in a really, really tough spot here with this SCOTUS nomination process about to begin, because her base is going to want her to sit there in that Senate room and tear Amy Coney Barrett to bits, and Kamala is going to want to do that, but doesn't that make the Biden-Harris ticket look even more radical?
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. I mean, this justice nominee looks like she walks on water to me. I mean, she just embodies the intellect, the mind, the virtues, the family, the love of country, the love of Constitution. And she just seems like a nice person. So, yeah, they're in a bind. And you know, Kamala's very left, and the hard left is going to want her playing hardball. And so we'll see what comes up. I was fascinated. Politico had a piece up a few couple days ago on the justice nominee for being the new line of feminist. Very interesting that she worked with her husband, and she assumed a commanding position, a top level leadership position, but because her husband played a role, a significant role, sharing, and that this is a new form of feminism. And for Politico to put that out, I was scratching my head. Sometimes I can't catch the ninja warrior tactics the left is using until later. So I read, everybody should take a peek at it. It was interesting.
Dean, you're one of these fancy college types. Explain to me what charisma is. I've never been able to define it. Look, Barack Obama, as much as I couldn't stand him, he had it. Donald yeah. Trump, as much as many people can't stand him, he has it. Kamala Harris yeah. does not. People seem to forget. Yeah. She just ran in a primary and flamed out like the Hindenburg. Why doesn't she yeah. have it?
Oh, boy, that is a tough one. I don't know if I can. You caught me flat-footed on this one, brother. it's kind of an innate gift. I mean, it's kind of, you know it when you see it. You know, Bill Clinton, I went to church with him 30 years ago, D.C. at the right on 16th Street Methodist. And he'd walk in, and the guys was like, hey, you're cool. And the women loved him. And then Hillary would come in later, and it was just more of a quiet factor. And I'm being Christian. And so, you know it when you see it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You know, when you see it. What was the coolest thing about being in D.C.? I mean, look, you're not there anymore. You're not running for office. You can be honest about yeah. it. And I know most of it sucked. I've spent enough time there to know the place sucks. I even think the food sucks for the most part. But there had to be some moment standing in the Capitol or something like that where you looked around and thought, this is friggin' awesome.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm going up into the speaker's office and looking out the mall. It's pretty awe-inspiring. Being under the dome. All my friends in the Freedom Caucus were just tremendous fun people. The Democrats were fun in the weight room or whatever. They're all normal, and then they get on TV, and we don't change. The Freedom Caucus, we say the same thing in the weight rooms we say on TV. And the Democrats, oh my word, I mean, it's a transformation like you've never seen. So I mean, they were kind of fun in person, but then once the TV hit or the campaigns began, it all turned. But the personal dimension, being on the floor, voting, taking part in that, when you're putting your card in, and you know, I mean, it's like being on a news show, right? I mean, you're taking real votes that affect the real world. They're very complex issues. You're trying to do the best for the country in the long run. And that's pretty exhilarating to be in that position and be entrusted with that from your fellow citizens.
Dean, as you and I have talked about several times before, we've seen all kinds of street chaos over the past few months. And obviously yeah. some of this is just bored, angry young people who've been taught to hate America. Okay, fine. But we also know there's a lot of this that's organized. They're pulling out U-Haul trucks with pre-made signs. We have vans that have been caught busting into town, expensive vans. I mean, we know some of this is organized and paid for.
Yeah.
So someone has a plan here. You don't pay for anything without some kind of a plan. It looks like electoral suicide to cause street chaos in a year like this. What is the plan? What do you think they're thinking?
Well, I mean, it's fairly clearly out of the straight Marxist playbook, right? They ran colored revolutions in Eastern Europe, you know, the Velvet Revolution, the Orange Revolution. You destabilize and make fairness claims about the election. Then you fiddle and take over the media, and then you put violence in the streets, bring chaos and instability, and make people full of anxiety. So they're just willing to make it all go away. And so that used to be what you know, our special ops folks did, CIA in Eastern Europe. Now those very same people are pulling it off in our own country. And they're following the exact same steps, right? I mean, when Facebook and Twitter have declared they will not call a winner on November 3rd ahead of time, and Michigan has, you know, put in a two-week delay, Pennsylvania Supreme Court, two-week delay. They're just sowing the seeds. And then, you know, and then the left says, President Trump says he will not fold immediately if we cheat on him. And Trump says, yeah, no, I'm not. If you cheat, I'm not folding. And then that's the news story. And so, yeah, it's on the left. James, whatever, the undercover guy, he's got a guy with 300 ballots in his car. Have you seen that one yet? I think it was released yesterday. Yeah. So, I mean, that's what's going on. And over in Omar's district, Congresswoman Omar, and they're collecting car full of ballots, and they're going into senior homes and saying, give me your ballot. And the seniors are just handing them over. And they got boxes of ballots. And so that's, they were first going that way, but now with the Supreme Court uncertainty and the fact that everything is going to ultimately end up at the Supreme Court, right? Every ballot that is adjudicated is going to come down to the Supreme Court. And so now Axios, you know, the mouthpiece for the left, a few days ago turned around and said, nope, hey, everybody, reverse course, you got to vote in person. Because all of a sudden, you know, Barr and the attorney general put in 200 log cases to start setting the predicate to show fraud on the Democrat side. And then if you win another seat on the Supreme Court and everything goes there, now all of a sudden the Dems are nervous and you got to vote in person to make sure you really do have a vote that counts and that is legal. And so a lot of shifting sand under our feet right now.
Congressman Dave Bratt, Dean of Business at Liberty. Thank you, sir.
Hey, thank you, Jesse. Great show.
Appreciate it. A lot of shifting sand under our feet, he said. I like that. I'm going to steal that from him and give him no credit for it whatsoever. All right, we got more. Hang on. Joining us now, Republican political strategist, and I've argued man who should be head of the RNC, Joseph Pinion III. Joseph, what makes a leftist? Is it nature? Is it nurture? Is it government schools? Is it mom and dad? Is it a lack of mom, a lack of dad? What is it? What makes one?
Look, I'm going to maybe try to get myself killed today, but I think that somehow we are going to be the party of self-accountability. Then we have to take responsibility for the fact that we have not been able to get our conservative values and the value of the policies that come out of conservatism in front of enough people. And so, you know, when you have people all the way going back to Frederick Douglass talking about when people feel as if there is poverty and a conspiracy against them, then again, there can be no peace, there can be no justice, and ultimately there can be no America. And so I think, you know, what we have coming out of this leftist movement is a desire for people to feel seen. We have a desire for people who never understood what America actually stood for to actually tear down the only thing that empowers them to achieve the outcomes that all Americans deserve. And I think, you know, what happens is this self-loathing, this self-grieving, this notion between somehow you want to have people feel validated, even though what we really want is equal opportunity. This myth of equal outcomes. I think we have to find a better way to hone in on that message, because otherwise, as we can see what the Democrats are doing right now, America as we know it is under full attack.
Okay, so how do we convey that? If there's somebody sitting there and he's a relatively blank human being, and I'm sitting there telling him, look, vote for me, and I'm going to give you this, and I'm going to give you that, and I'm going to give you that. And Joseph Pinion III sitting there saying, look, vote for me, and I'm going to give you the chance to earn it yourself. Human nature is what it is, my man.
Well, look, here's what I tell people. I say, look, you know, The fact remains that if you're a Democrat, if more black people, more poor people, more people in despair voting for Democrats with the solutions, there wouldn't be any problems because people who are black, people who are in despair, people who have been suffering from abject poverty have been voting for Democrats for over 40 years. So from that standpoint, if the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results, it is insane to think that Democrats have the solutions for what ails black America, what ails poor America, what ails forgotten America. What we can talk about is the fact that anytime people are given a crack, a sliver of the piece of opportunity that America promises, that old saying from Martin Luther King that all we ask of America is to be true to what you say on paper. Well, I think instance by instance, whether you're talking about black people in professional sports, whether you're talking about black people in professional hockey, every time you have given people a crack towards equal opportunity, they have excelled. I firmly believe that whether you're talking about black people, whether you're talking about people who have come here one generation removed, anytime people are given a pathway to prosperity on equal footing, that is what America has always been about. And history shows us that that is the greatest trajectory for people to get the America that people say they actually aspire to. So to me, those are the things that we talk about. If education is the silver bullet, that our public education system as it's currently constituted is broken. And it's only party where you can talk about solutions that work, tool choice. Those ideas emanate from the right, whether you're talking about individuals who want to have an opportunity to make a living wage, as liberals talk about. The opportunity to make a living wage stems from the fact that children are taught the skills they need to live. That's talking about trade schools. All of the things that actually lead to the outcomes Democrats say they love emanate from the right. And as soon as we can get people to understand that, we'll be in a much better place.
Wait a minute, there are black professional hockey players? For real?
Yeah, man, I'm trying to tell people. You know, we've got black professional hockey players, we've got black prima ballerinas. I mean, and again, not many of them, but I think that also goes to the fact about opportunity, right? This notion that somehow that if you give people a chance to be able to live their life on their own terms and the framework for which for they can actually build that life for themselves, that is when you actually start to see progress accelerate. And the reality is that Democrats aren't trying to get progress to accelerate. They're trying to actually create a mirage to get people to feel better about the fact that they're exactly where they started off, right? As you know, I think our recently deposed Mia Love once said that Democrats are always great about giving you the tools to stay exactly where you are. And Republicans are really trying to give people the tools they need to achieve the America that they deserve. And I think that those might sound like platitudes, but issue by issue, from education to actual job training, to the pathway to be able to provide for one's family, to be able to buy a house, all of these things emanate from the right to personal liberty, the right to individualism. America is built on rugged individualism. We protect the rights of the ultimate minority, not minorities per se, but the ultimate minority being the individual, because we know if one man is free, he has the power to not only lift himself up, but everyone that he loves.
I will admit I am not up on the ballerina scene, but it's been some time before since I looked into it. Now, Kamala Harris, she flamed out big time in the Democratic primary. I know we're supposed to forget that now that she's the VP nominee, but she had a little blip where she went like this, and then she crashed and burned hard. I will admit, full disclosure, I thought she was going to do better in the primary. I think she looks pretty stinking good, especially for a U.S. senator her age. I think she looks good. She speaks well. She's an attorney. And it just doesn't work. There's no connection there for some reason. Why isn't it working?
Well, I think the reasons why she peaked helped show us why she flamed out so poorly. The reality is, when you talk about somebody like Kamala Harris, the thing that made her this, you know, this kind of one shining moment in the primaries was, I call this, you know, this basically pre-planned, pre-packaged, that little girl was me. They had everything from the T-shirts to the mugs ready to go. And then the American people quickly discovered that there was nothing behind the sloganeering. And so I think similarly, what we have right now in this Biden and Harris ticket is a mirage that's been presented to the American people. This notion that they are going to be this glorious return to some type of normalcy, as if normal was working for anybody, because if normal had been working, President Trump wouldn't have been elected in the first place. But that notwithstanding, behind the scenes, there is an attack and an assault on the America that we love. They're talking about packing the courts. They've got a vice presidential candidate in Harris who has voted with Nancy Pelosi more than AOC. When you start talking about legislation, that actually becomes law. So those are the types of things that I think people should focus on. Hopefully that's the type of thing that we'll see more as we get down the home stretch here. If we can actually start to tether this ticket to the extreme policies they voted for and not the actual moderation that they try to, you know, basically masquerade with.
How does Mike Pence stack up as far as VPs go? We never talk about Mike Pence, and I'm sure that's just because, I mean, Donald Trump is one of those sun candidates where everything in the world, everything in the universe revolves around him. So Mike Pence is almost as much of a forgotten man as a VP can possibly be. What is he? Does he fill in gaps for Trump? Could Trump have anyone there? What is Pence?
Well, look, I think vice presidents serve different roles at different times. I think the reality was, if we're going back 4 years, there was a lot of issues with President Trump when it came to the evangelical base, people of faith who weren't necessarily sure that the man who thought that 2 Corinthians was 2 Corinthians was the man who could actually be the person you could trust on issues of faith. Now, the reality is we come back with 3 Supreme Court justices, most likely, all of whom are going to be able to substantiate and affirm people's right to practice their faith, to be able to live out their Christian identity in a world where Christianity had come under attack. So I think that, you know, that role has been served. And what Mike Pence has actually become has been kind of this rod of security, this rod of consistency that I think puts the minds of many Republicans at ease who maybe love the president but not necessarily enjoy the unpredictability of some of his day-to-day tweeting. But at the same time, I think as we start talking from a policy standpoint, somebody who was able to stand in with President Trump during the COVID-19 crisis, to be able to deal with some of those issues on a day-to-day basis, already having the institutional memory of somebody who has been in Washington, who has a relationship with those governors around the country, to bridge that divide that most presidents deal with in the first year. And I think what President Trump has in him is a partner who shares his vision, which ultimately, when you start talking about how to govern effectively, is one of the most important things you can have.
Joseph Pinion III, everybody. What have I been telling you? Appreciate you, my man.
Absolutely, man. Have a good one.
You too. Dude is sharp. We'll be back. Joining me now from the Independent Women's Forum, Inez Stettman. Inez, Kamala Harris, the left, we're focusing on those things tonight for our special. What is Kamala Harris? What does she really believe? She does not obviously seem like a genuine person. I famously thought she was going to do better than she did because she can speak well, she looks pretty good, but what is she?
You know, we have that in common. I actually thought Kamala Harris would do well in the primaries as well. But I think it speaks to who she is, which is she's disingenuous. She's all things to all people. She has the most progressive record. She's basically a comparable progressive record to Bernie Sanders in the Senate. But she, since she does have a law enforcement background, she's capable of sort of threading her ideas in a way that sound moderate. I think she ends up frustrating everybody. She certainly did in the primary. She ended up frustrating the Bernie bros, frustrating the far left progressive wing, frustrating the woke wing, and then finally frustrating moderates because she actually, her policy proposals were very far left. So she, I think that's really her defining characteristic. She tries to be all things to all people and then really fails at it.
I don't think for one second that Joe Biden is going to win the presidency, although he certainly could. The polls say he's winning. I mean, whatever. Let's say, though, Joe Biden wins. How do you handle Kamala Harris if you're Joe Biden? Everybody expects her to be president at some point in your next 4 years. Do you keep her at arm's length? I mean, you know she's an ambitious ladder climber who's done several things to rise to the top. How do you handle that if you're Joe?
I think we're seeing how Joe's handling it. You know, it's not just him that's calling libs and not out there in the public eye. It's Kamala Harris as well. He's not really letting her far off that leash. And the few times he has let her off that leash, she said things like referring to the Harris administration instead of the Biden-Harris administration. Look, I mean, this is a concern. Joe Biden is in his late 70s, right? And so I do think that usually I'm in the camp that vice presidents don't really matter, right? It's the most useless job that's ever been invented, except in very, very narrow circumstances where it becomes the most important job ever invented. But I think one of those circumstances is when you have a candidate who's, unfortunately, both of these candidates are quite, you know, getting up there into their 70s, particularly Biden. And you have to think about what will happen if he were to pass away during office. I mean, not that any of us would hope that that would be the case, but you have to think about it in a way that you wouldn't have to think about it as much if, you know, you have a candidate who's 62, right, or in his 50s. And so I think this pick also shows a lot about how Joe Biden is trying to thread that chasm between his left flank and the moderate voters that he's hoping to sway in the Rust Belt. She's trying to, like, she's all things to all people. The progressive left isn't happy with her as a pick. He tried to give them a nod, but didn't really succeed with Kamala Harris. And then the moderates are concerned about her record. So again, like, I'm not that enthusiastic about her, and I'm not that afraid of her, unless, of course, she becomes president.
Who does the progressive left like? I can't ever figure out who they actually like. I mean, as you pointed out, her record is completely far left, and he picked her, and you're right, they freaked out. They acted like she was some establishment crony. Who do they want? Is it Bernie and nobody else?
So a couple things. For certain, I think the base is split in the Democratic Party. I don't think this is just a debate between sort of the establishment left and the three people who actually really, really like Biden and the rest of the party. I think that the base of the party itself has a schism that they're going to have to resolve. So you have the essentially neoliberal wokes, right? On economics, they're like, they're to the left of us, certainly. They're to the left even of somebody like Trump, who's quite moderate on economic policy and spending. But they're not all the way in the Bernie Sanders socialism, like nationalized industries camp, right? They have Wall Street fundraisers, and the way they burnish their progressive bona fides is instead of by on economic issues, it's on all of this, you know, identity politics stuff, right? It's the wokeness, the, you know, the pronouns and the bio, all of that stuff. And then you have the sort of socialist base of the Democratic Party, which in some ways is more traditional. It's sort of the working class socialist base. And a lot of those folks went for Bernie Sanders, who Bernie Sanders, as recently as 5 years ago, was not woke, right? Bernie Sanders criticized immigration as dropping wages. He was even pro Second Amendment because where he comes from in Vermont, there's a lot of rural voters. So I do think there's a certain type of voter that's quite common in the Democratic Party who is economically far left, where Bernie is, and is not at all afraid of the word socialism, for example, but really doesn't like this sort of woke wing. And that's something they're going to have to resolve and meld together. But really, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris satisfy neither one of those camps, right? So that's why I think they're struggling to have any kind of enthusiasm in their base.
Is the Democrat base more divided than the base on the right? What is the base on the right? How are we divided if we are?
I think they are divided more on the left now than the right. I do think there are structural divisions in the right. So, for example, geographically, I think going forward, the Republican Party is going to have to balance between an increasingly important Rust Belt state, which a lot of those Bernie voters are actually open to Trump on messages of trade and immigration. But they're really far to the left on economic issues from the rest of the party, and they have different economic interests when it comes to trade. So, like, you know, Texas, Arizona, Nebraska, a lot of those states, they benefit from global trade in a way that the Rust Belt has not. And so this is going to be one of these traditional, I think, coalition building moments for the Republican Party, where they're really going to have to sort of balance those two parts of your geographic coalition. And they're going to have to balance, again, two parts of the base, the Tea Party, that is more limited government, in some ways is more traditional Reaganites, but let's call ourselves, at least, like, I count myself in this, the bold colors, not pale pastels Reaganites, right? Again, the establishment, I think, has like 3%, right? Jeb Bush got 3% in the primary, right? But I do think there's a difference between the Tea Party and sort of the Trump movement, or at least the voters that bolster Trump and put him over the top. But they have one very important thing in common, and that is culture war issues. that's where I think that the base of the Republican Party is just about as rock solid as any base of any party in American history. We are terrified of the culture war that's being propagated by the left.
And as I worry that we're going to make the same mistake after Trump that Democrats made after Barack Obama. They thought Barack Obama, who was this wildly charismatic dude, and they thought it was his positions and policies that made him popular, when really it's just a personality contest. I think the GOP is going to make that same mistake post-Trump and think all the Trump stances are the most popular stances, when really Trump is just the freaking sun and the whole universe revolves around him.
There's definitely some truth to that, because there have been candidates who have tried to run on a Trumpist message and failed completely on his coattails. That being said, I do think that some of the things that Trumpism addresses are correcting structural problems, cracks in Reaganism and the traditional Republican coalition that have appeared, especially since the close of the Cold War. And I do think that the Republican Party going forward is one going to have to really appeal more to working class families. I think that probably will be as permanent as anything is in politics, but at least for the foreseeable future, a shift, for example, on trade. I think those are probably features that are going to stay with the Republican Party, although I worry about some of the geographic balance, as I said before. But then again, something that Trump is really good at, and if we are to have any shot in this mess, whoever comes after Trump as the figurehead for the right has to be really good at it as well. In fact, I argue that he would have to be, or she, I suppose, would have to be, this is the Jesse Kelly show, it can just be he, right? But he's going to have to be even better than Trump in terms of the actual policy follow through on these kinds of institutional, you know, issues around surrounding culture, like education, you know, like, you know, because Trump was good at sort of flashy headlines that grab at some of these issues. And I think that's better than the alternative, right? Because the alternative is a GOP that just ignores them and pretends that tax cuts are going to save America. And I think that's done. Whatever the right is going to look like going forward, that's done. Like the Paul Ryan agenda, that's done. I don't think that has a base, even among people like you and I, who are very limited government and love low taxes and all that. But we understand the culture war stuff has to take precedence over that, because we're not going to have a country left.
So who is he, or God forbid, she? Do you have somebody in mind?
I really don't, and that actually worries me quite a bit. But we don't know who's going to rise up and sort of fill this vacuum. I mean, as you said, Trump sucks all the oxygen out of any room that he's in. But I do think that there is a very vibrant intellectual debate on the right now. So that I think the structure, you know, the replacement for the Reagan three-legged stool, that debate is very energized. It is going on behind the scenes and behind the day-to-day politics and all of that. So I think intellectually we will be quite well prepared if divided on certain things. But the Reagan hasn't emerged yet, right? We're doing the work that Buckley did in the 50s to try to pull together the different elements of the right. Right now, we have yet to see, or at least I have yet to see, the Reagan who's actually going to be a charismatic political figure to pull it all together and put it into action in a political way.
Inez Stettman, that was outstanding. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
All right, we'll be back. That was not all to panic you. Look, I know we had fun tonight. That was not all to panic you, though, about Kamala, the left, what they are, what they believe. It was more of a heads up. And I'll be honest, lots of times I'll do one of these shows, it's as much for me as it is for you. It is important that we constantly remind ourselves exactly what we're up against, exactly who is going for power, and what they'll do with it when they get there. You know the frustration I share with you all the time about Republicans, how they screw this up or screw that up, or how weak they are on this. It drives me nuts. But Democrats, almost to their credit, they mean what they say. When Kamala Harris is out there saying radical things on the campaign trail, Kamala Harris means those things. When leftists are calling you Nazi, that's how they think. Just because it's insane, just because it's untrue, that doesn't change the facts on the ground. The fact is, We really cannot afford to have these people in power. My goodness, that would be a rough 4-8 years? Gives me the willies. All right, we'll do it again. Newton Group Transfer. They are here to help you if you're stuck in a timeshare. These stories from people who have these timeshares and can't get out of them, they're shocking. These timeshare companies, not all of them, but so many, they get their hooks into you and you can't give them up. You can't give them up. Or they'll do things like they charge you thousands of dollars. One girl, she got past her timeshare when her mother passed away. She gets past the timeshare, doesn't want the timeshare, doesn't use the timeshare. They tell her she can get out of it for $4,000. She has to come up with a $4,000 check. This is not right. It's unjust. And Newton Group Transfers is here to help you. If you are in a timeshare and want out or know someone who is, call 888-845-3773. That's 888-84-JESSE or go to timesharejesse.com. Newton Group Transfer. They will help you out.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart Podcast.